Healing is an essential understanding for good life. It means to make healthy. Not just in the limited medical sense of the body working as it should, but in the religious sense of right with life, our whole being living as it should. Tony Cade Bambera's 1982 novel, The Salt Eaters, is the focus of that Sharon Welch reading. And it's a paradigm for healing and sustainable living and working for justice and then individual and communal health. Reviewer Angela Jackson claims that Bambera defines our time as one of healing, of intellectual and spiritual challenges. She speaks of the book's magnetic pull into health for both individuals and the social order. Welch, as I said, then uses Bambera's work as the story piece and example for her chapter. And the chapter's title is The Healing Power of Love. The Healing Power of Love. As I said, the page I used for the reading has become a guiding piece of my personal scripture. And here are the guiding messages I remember and refer to. I don't read it all the time, but when I think of how to address situations of hurt, and I'll explain more of this later, these are the phrases that come to mind. Discovering how to learn from pain without trying either to conquer it or to become immune to it, or I would say, or give in to it. But it's the line, wanting to feel good all the time. I want to feel good all the time. I just do. That's how I live. People say, how are you? And I'm supposed to say, I'm good. I'm feeling good. Wanting to feel good all the time. But then there's that line, she's supposed to feel bad. There are times when you're supposed to feel bad. That's how your body does its work. But what do you want? You want a pill. Give me a pill. Let's fix it. Let's get it right. Everything we address, every societal ill, every personal ill we address, people want the pill to make it right. She's supposed to feel bad. And then there's the line, the healing that's possible for all of us lies in the recognition that although there is a way through, there is no way out. I always remember it as there is no way out, there is a way through. And that way through is the healing path. That's very difficult to do in a culture that's so focused and makes so accessible entertainment, which is that leaving which is uncomfortable, and moving to something which isn't, even if it's just at the level of zoning out from it. The way through is the healing path. Want to feel good all the time. We are all impatient patients with ourselves and with society at large. We want a pill. If something is wrong or feels wrong, we are impatient to have it fixed. We want cure and to know what the cure is now. Who wouldn't? But cure is not always possible, and cure and healing are not the same thing. Cure is a fix. Healing is a word of wholeness and may or may not be what we think we want as that fix we are seeking. Here's how author Fred Recklow makes a distinction in his book, Partners in Care, Medicine and Ministry Together. Cure may occur without healing. Healing may occur without cure. Cure alters what is. Healing offers what might be. Cure is an act. Healing is a process. Cure seeks to change reality. Healing embraces reality, what may be a new reality. Cure takes charge. Healing takes time. Cure avoids grief. Healing assumes grief. Cure speaks. Healing listens. Healing restores health or creates new sense or form of health. In our quick fix, feel good, right away culture, healing is a slow word. It's an organic word, a growing together. It takes time. It's a word for mending and bringing and knitting together what has been broken or torn apart. It requires work and patience, but it also requires rest and recovery. You don't work your way through healing. As the Soul Matters preface notes, cure is something we do, but healing has a partner quality. It is not just the product of our will and work. It also has to happen from the inside out. A wound can cover over and not be healed. It's just out of sight and out of mind, waiting to surface again. How many of you have a cat or have two or three cats? Right? How many trips to the vet have you made to have abscesses treated in the course of the time of having that cat? Mine was an indoor-outdoor cat and a male. He got puncture wounds, deep wounds. Those abscesses were puncture wounds that had disappeared and we didn't know about, but then they threatened to become systemic. The skin can't just heal over. The wound has to heal from the inside out. From our reading, if you ignore it, it won't be able to breathe. If you ignore it, it will merely deepen, spread, and resurface later, wanting to release. And when later happens, it will hurt even more. If you turn to 602 in the hymnal, it's a reading by Lao Tzu, "If There Is to Be Peace." And what if you read it with that understanding of healing in mind? Or if you read it from the bottom up, that would be healing from the inside out. But if you look at the surface, if there is to be peace in the world, there must be peace in the nations. If there is to be peace in the nations, there must be peace in the cities. If there is to be peace in the cities, there must be peace between neighbors. If there is to be peace between neighbors, there must be peace in the home. If there is to be peace in the home, there must be peace in the heart. It also makes what you then do necessary and important. You become a healer. In the medical model, if something is broken, we go to the doctor and the doctor fixes it. A broken leg needs to be set in place. Maybe a pin gets put in. That's fixed. But then the healing begins. The set bone must do what? Knit itself together. It takes time to mend and heal and then maybe go into rehab. I thought about this. How many of you remember or have darned socks? Right. What do you do? You take the hole and take the sock and you knit it together. I looked through my drawer and couldn't find a sock that needed to be darned or knitted together. It's getting close. I mean, if you wear those with sandals, well, anybody who wears socks with sandals would be embarrassed. But, I mean, you'd... Sorry about that. That's just a personal thought, but I would be embarrassed with these socks. But you know why I don't have those socks in my drawer anymore? We throw them out. You throw them out and get a new pair. Where do you get a new pair? You get a new pair at Walmart. Because we don't have time to knit, sit around and knit socks together. We just go and get a new pair of socks when we need them. Socks work that way. People are sitting there going, yeah, I'm not darning socks anymore. I'm going to buy new ones. Socks work that way, but grief doesn't. And that's the same for all of us. When you've experienced the loss of a loved one or something that hurts you deeply, you can't go out and get another one or get a new you or go back to being that you that was before. You hurt, and then it takes time to heal. There is a way through, but there is no way out. it takes its own time. The body knows. And I can say that keeping yourself busy, which a lot of us do, you'll say, I'm keeping myself busy because I don't want to feel that. It's a form of covering over the wound, and it will resurface at a later time. I didn't know how to cry. I didn't know how to cry. But then I experienced a major loss, big enough, disruptive enough that I went to counseling. And the counselor told me that I needed to cry. Told me I needed to find a safe place to sit and be with my feelings and breathe and focus on what I was feeling. And why? So the body could do its work of healing. I can see puzzled looks on faces out there. But what I did was I went and I sat on the floor with my back against the sofa, and I called up those feelings. I can still visit that wound now. It's healed. It's not something I'm going to fall into, but I can call it back up in that sense. We talk about what? I fell apart. I lost it, right? Those are words of social presentation. But in a safe place, I didn't fall apart. I didn't lose it. I moved into that space for healing in my safe place. I can remember going back to the therapist and being upset at one point because I wasn't crying much anymore. And she said, well, maybe you don't need to. But it was that gradual sense of moving through the grief. Our discussion group last week talked about our own healing places, our little places. One of the healing places was just whenever I turn off the TV and the computer and move to something grounded. But my example of that was on the floor. Healing takes time. Many times over the last couple of years, in response to the controversial police shootings of black men, it seems like some people are emphasizing healing much too quickly. It feels like an effort to quiet the unrest and settle things down and move away from tragedy and uncertainty in a way that may sound compassionate to some, but can feel tone deaf to others who are not in that place yet. You can apply that in the general sense. You can take it on personally. The call for healing sounds like a push to want to feel good when we should feel bad. It can feel like a discounting of the pain. Like these lives didn't matter that much. Let's get on with it. Dr. Yolanda Pierce has a litany for respecting and staying with the pain and the discomfort and the ambiguity and the loss until it's time. She calls it a litany for those not ready for healing. This is it. Let us not rush to the language of healing before understanding the fullness of the injury and the depth of the wound. Let us not rush to offer a Band-Aid when the gaping wound requires surgery and complete reconstruction. Let us not offer false equivalencies, thereby diminishing the particular pain being felt in a particular circumstance, in a particular historical moment. Let us not rush past the loss of this mother's child, this father's child, someone's beloved son. Instead, let us mourn black and brown men and women, those killed extrajudicially every 28 hours. Let us be silent when we don't know what to say. Let us be humble and listen to the pain, rage, and grief pouring from the lips of our neighbors and friends. A litany for those not ready for healing. Our Unitarian Universalist theology, that is, our thoughts about the nature of God or the universe, is a theology of creative resistance, standing on the side of life and love. I would call it a healing theology. It is immanent, that it is God or the power among us, and therefore patient. God in, among life, and all of us, always mending and knitting together, given half a chance, creating anew. It's not so much a sense of save the world, that comes from a transcendent God or a sense of a power out there, impatient to fix things or return things to a set judged order. But it's a sense of heal the self and the world through your actions and in conversation together. This summer and fall has been painful. It's been full of painful, damaging events. I mentioned Hurricane Matthew, and we can look at the ongoing flooding. I wanted to move past the hurricane after it had moved through, but then all of a sudden, people are being flooded out of their homes. There's been the police shootings, and then the shootings of police. The Syrian war, other moments not named. And now, the presidential campaign. Please, let it be over. Somebody fix it. Make the pain go away. Whatever your politics, I heard one pundit say that he guessed that 80 to 90% of the electorate would be in favor of the election being over today. But new wounds have been created, and old wounds have surfaced and come into our awareness and our conversation. We're feeling some hurts that have been covered over. And that may be a good part coming out of the struggles. I'm noticing the language of healing more in groups and meetings. We're hurting in new and noticeable ways. In a meeting of a group called Compassionate Congregations, as we begin to talk about finding a way to help refugees resettle, we also talked about the need for the healing that would need to be done after the election, as a nation, but also with our friends and neighbors, as a community of people who live together. We talked about creating the space for conversation and ways to be together so our divides and angers and separation might feel some love and connection and common cause. We are being shaken out of the comfort of our routines. We feel that things are broken and what is already broken and insufficiently healed but covered over is being exposed and then brought into new light. Think about how much just this week sexual harassment and sexism and even misogyny have been talked about openly, analyzed, and talked about with outrage. Look at how racism has moved from the background and more into the foreground of our awareness and conversation. We even take the time now together in community to talk and learn and organize and figure out what to do. Yes, we are impatient for a fix, for that something to do, that cure to make us feel better. People voice that frustration all the time, over and over again. And at the same time, during the Race Matters workshop this week, people brought up the language of needing to keep the wound open and not cover it over with our feel-good actions in order for it and us to heal some more. Again, 40 of us showed courage to keep feeling and trying. We stayed with our discomfort for the benefit of everyone. We stayed with our discomfort and helped heal the world. And from the comments, we know we are daunted by all there is to do. We know we are discouraged by how much time has passed and how much it seems that things haven't changed. And yet, we are encouraged as we look around and then feel what a difference we made in 2 hours. We feel encouraged as we remind ourselves of what is different, what has gotten better, what has healed some. One person shared the shift across generations, the difference in attitudes about race from her grandmother to her mother to herself to her children and now her grandchildren and what their classroom at their school looked like and who their friends were, who they spent time together with. And how different that was from her experience and her grandmother's experience. And this week, as First Lady Michelle Obama spoke out so eloquently and authentically against the sexual harassment of women, she closed that part of her remarks by saying that women have the power to speak out to power. And she did it in the sense of saying that they now have the power to speak out to power. She said that we, meaning women, and she stood there as a woman of color, can do what many of our grandmothers and some of our mothers could not do. What did she say? She said, we can vote. I sat there with tears in my eyes. Not with a voice of, it's just a vote, what is that all about? There's so much going on. But with tears in my eyes for what that meant and for her standing there saying that. I would say it's also time for me to sit down in my special place for a good cry. Because I'm going to miss her as my first lady. I'm going to miss her as an inspiration and an embodiment of what is and what can be, what has become, and how much more there is to do. But I get to look now. I do look now with awareness. And you can look now with that awareness to take with you, because there she is. We have come far, and we have far to go. Healing takes time. When there's a fresh wound in your heart, keep it open until it heals. Air it out. Understand it. Watch the beauty pour into your openness. Remain open to feel lightness. Remain open to feel free. And for those of you who are sitting there going, yeah, Jim, that's fine, but I want something to do. Here's something to do. And if you don't do it, don't come to me saying, Jim, I want something to do. Moral Monday is happening and having a rally with Reverend William Barber in Pack Square in Asheville. You don't have to drive to Raleigh. You just have to find a parking space in Asheville. Okay, that's a lot like driving to Raleigh. But it's on Monday, October 24th from 4 to 6 p.m. And you don't even have to find a parking space, because we'll drive you there. So if any of you are interested in going, see Charlotte Corrigan. Charlotte's in the back here. She'll have a sign-up sheet. We'll carpool. We'll figure it out. What's Moral Monday about? It's for you standing up, for you saying, I vote, for you saying, this is my voice in this place, in this time, that says, we should have more money for public education. It's a moral issue. For you saying, we should have a minimum wage for all people. It's a larger minimum wage, a livable minimum wage. It's a moral issue. We should make it where everybody can register to vote and be able to vote. It's a moral issue. Whatever our, quote, religious boxes and differences are, we should get together on this. So there's the something to do, the Moral Monday rally, to be there. Healing takes time, healed, not hurried.